You are on day four of the Smartest Telesummit 2007. And again, we're going to hear the first two presenters back-to-back, Alita DeWall and Linda Fries, for the next hour and a half. Then we'll take a 15-minute break and come back for our final keynote of the day with me, your host, Ariane Goodwin. But first, we want to thank our sponsors, ArtSpan.com and ArtExchange.com. These companies offer website space for artists, and I encourage you to check them out and see if it's a good fit. Well, Smartest Day 4 is so lucky to start out with Alita DeWall, Director of ArtistCareerTraining.com. That is a virtual university of programs to help artists make a better living making art. Hello, Alita. How are you this morning in sunny California?
It is sunny today, but brisk. I'm up in the hills, so I don't know how it is in Southern California, but up here in the north, it's brisk.
How far north are you?
I'm just near San Francisco.
Oh, my old stomping grounds. I do love that city. Mm-hmm. Would you like me to come back to open the lines for you at the end, or do you want to do that on your own?
Why don't you do that? Because you know me, I can get carried away talking with these people, and we might just carry on past you.
Okay, great. That's just fine. All right, so I'll come back. What would you like me to do? Half an hour, 40 minutes?
I've got my timer set to 44 minutes, and I'm just going to hit it to start as soon as you leave.
Okay. Well, Artis, I leave you in the best of hands. I'll have to take it away.
Thank you. Okay. Welcome, everybody. Everything that I do about teaching artists to make a better living making art is important, but the topic that Ariane asked me to start with today, the five myths that stop you from making a profit, really probably, although it's not going to give you the most concrete set of notes, I know one of you is taking shorthand notes here, it is probably one of the most important things to look at in your art career. I have seen artists who are incredibly talented. I've seen some of your work. I've been looking up some of the people who wrote to me and looking at your work online, and I'm astounded at how wonderful it is. We have such a great group here. But I've seen artists from just beginners to people who are very accomplished run into some of these myths that I'm going to talk about. It doesn't take much to actually deal with them, but they kind of creep back in. So you have to watch them. They're insidious. They come in the back door. So these five myths that will stop you from making a profit are really important. They'll help you start to get rid of, really, most of the work has to be done internally, some of the limiting beliefs that you have about yourselves, about money and art, and the limiting beliefs that others have. So what I'm going to do is go through five myths today. This is going to be quite a different topic treatment than I will do in the class on getting collectors, because this really is more of a thing that comes from your insides, as I said. In getting collectors, we can make lots of outside hard plans, but you got to knock this one down first. So artists who want to make a profit can do so. I'm working with a number of artists, and some of you on the call I know are in the Artist Career Training Program. If you're on the preview call, you might remember that I mentioned that there is an artist that I've been working with for a couple of years. She's in one of our annual programs, the 12-month program. She has also been working with me individually, and she's been creating her portfolio. She's overhauled her website. We did a 12-month plan last November, and she's already adding things to it. So it's really going well. So when I met with her for a meeting just a few weeks ago to set up what we're going to do in the first few months of the year, she looked at me with one of those looks on her face, and I thought I was in deep trouble. Because sometimes I get overenthusiastic, and I scare people with the ideas that I have. And she looked at me, and she put her head down, and she said, I have a bone to pick with you. She said, I have to call my accountant because she has to raise her tax payments. She's doubled her income in the last year. She's done that a lot by doing things that are very smart and businesslike and having good business systems. But the other thing she's done is methodically attack some of the myths that no matter, she's been working for 30 years as an artist, and she's sold and shown. But these keep coming back to her, and since she's worked on them, it's really helped. So take a moment now and just get your pen down, and I don't want you to necessarily unmute yourself, and we are all mute, so I won't be able to hear you anyway. But write down one of the myths that you think is holding you back. Just write it down and put it aside. I'm going to talk to you about five myths that we talk about in the Artist Career Training Programs. We have 12 big mother ones. There are little babies underneath many of them, as you will find when you uncover your own. But the very first one is the myth that artists must starve. You can't think that way at all. The benefit of debunking myths, first of all, is going to help you with this, and we'll come back to that at the end just as a review. The first one, all good artists are poor, leads to that you must be a starving artist. There's actually even a website for starving artists there somewhere. And as long as you keep thinking that way, I'm a starving artist and most artists are starving, you will attract that kind of life towards yourself. It's uncanny how it happens. And some artists think it's okay and even preferable because they think it's better for their creativity. Now, I agree that, you know, if I could do with all the daily interruptions of the day, things like, you know, traffic, dishes, laundry, paying bills, I'd be much happier. I could just devote myself to the rest of it. But all of that's part of the life, and you need to keep that right in front of you. It'll actually help you keep working. I've also worked with artists who have other incomes, and I tell you that being a little bit hungry makes you work a little harder. But it doesn't mean you have to stay poor. And many of people will quote, you know, Vincent van Gogh as an example, you know, that the true artist really lives in a falling-down studio, has no heat in the winter, no AC in the summer. And this is supposed to be a good lifestyle because it's supposed to be keeping you in touch with your creativity and keep your ego in line. Well, I don't know, a hungry ego can be just as damaging as a fed one. So you really need to remember that Van Gogh actually came from a very wealthy family. He came from a family of gallery dealers, and he himself worked in an important gallery for over 6 years. And while he was a painter, his brother sent him a generous monthly stipend. So even the archetypal starving artist, Van Gogh, wasn't doing so badly. In fact, a certain amount of comfort can contribute to greater artistic success. If you're not worrying about how you're going to keep the lights on your studio, it's going to help your creativity. Now, the starving artist myth has been perpetuated by some artists who want to make them feel better about not succeeding. I'm sure that's not any of you because you wouldn't be on this call if it were. But some of the reasons that they buy into is that they're scared, they're insecure, they can't face the fact that maybe there's no market yet for the art they're creating, or maybe the market is somewhere else and it's not that easy to find. And the problem is, as I said earlier, that this myth can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's the last thing you want to have happen. And there's always a payoff for keeping things around in our lives that don't really serve us that well. And the payoff in this one is you get to feel like that mythological starving artist. But it doesn't help you buy any more paints or any more sculpture supplies. That's really a very empty payoff. And if you want to attract success in your life, you've got to experience of it and hang out with it. It really makes a difference. Success does not always equal money, but if you have some money, it's easier to find it. So make sure that you are approaching your art career as a business. And that means that you need to drop. I read an article the other day, and I'm sorry, I can't recall the author, but where the author was talking about artists that need to drop the adolescent notions of what it means to make a living as an artist. And those ones are very firmly held in your public's mind. So one of the things you need to do when you're debunking myths is not just look at your own situation, but look around you. There are countless people out there who want to believe that artists are starving. In fact, one of my private clients comes, again, from a wealthy family. They have a lot of manufacturing in their background, and so for them, producing a product that can be replicated and distributed is business success. And she has had several shows. She's developing a very strong body of work. She's represented by someone, a private art representative, and her work is very good. And she has been on a task. I've been working with her to educate her own family so they will support her. So artists are not necessarily forced to be poor for a number of reasons. You can generate your own income. And there's a lot of ways to do that. There's no shame in having a job on the side if that's what you need to do while you're building your art sales. If you can, get it in the art world. That way, at least you're educating yourself at the same time. A lot of the artists I know who go on to do well in galleries have worked in galleries themselves or as docents. And as you're gaining all of this wealth of information, that's going to help you to debunk this myth that all artists are poor. And to get out there also shows people that you are not the stereotypical artist. So there are two sides to this, again. Internally, first of all, respect yourself as an artist and take your profession seriously. If you don't respect yourself fully, it's hard for others to. The second thing is a very practical one. So I'll give you an internal one and a very practical one. Create a budget and stick to it. If you know that you have this much money already in your coffers, it allows you to make some plans without scaring yourself. There is no percentage in getting to the point where you can't continue your art business, because stopping is harder and starting again is harder than slowing down. So watch your shekels and watch your attitude, and you'll be more than wealthy enough. So myth number one, all good artists are poor. And the action steps to take, number one, respect yourself as an artist, take yourself seriously, and number two, a practical one, create a budget and stick with it. Now, number two, this kind of goes along with this, I guess, in a way, and it refers to artists who don't understand the full tilt of what it means to be a professional working artist. Myth number two is society owes artists a living. Now, I think that this really comes from the way that artists used to have patrons, and a lot of them came from wealthy families where they're encouraged to have hobbies but not encouraged to work. There's all kinds of reasons. But society doesn't owe anybody a living, and it doesn't give anybody a living, least of all artists. So it's up to you to make sure that you get society to appreciate what you're doing and why it's so important. Again, we're going to come back to an internal and an external approach to this. If you resent that society does not support you, then that attitude is going to also come into your work. And resentment, for any of you who have worked in different moods, and I know I have, and I can tell the difference in my work when I'm coming from a place that is one where I know what I'm doing, I'm focused, I'm enjoying what I'm doing, I'm anticipating a great outcome. If you're always waiting for someone to support you, then you're always waiting for the other shoe to drop, and that's not going to propel you forward. If you believe this myth, it means that you won't take charge of your own career, and a lot of times it leads to artists wondering why they can't get picked up by a gallery or an art rep or go into, you know, some kind of a situation where someone else is going to make sure that all they have to do is make the art. Now, there are some situations like that. I know several partnerships where the husband and wife are working together in their art business. And so the one of them does the art and the other one does the business end. And it's not only always the male doing the business end, which is very interesting. So those people have decided that they're going to create their own living. So being able to make your own living at art is something to be exceptionally proud of, because it's not easy. You haven't chosen the easiest profession in the world, but you're here for a good reason. It's something you know you need to do, and it's something you know with enough focus that you can do. So the sooner you start focusing on your career and how you're going to make a living, then the sooner you're going to get there. The first thing to do is to think internally about all of your other successes in your careers. If this is one that's hitting you and saying, why isn't it working for me out there? Do a little history on yourself and see. What I find is there are certain things that they come back in other disguises on me when I'm running into a problem. And if I spend some time sitting and writing, one of the best exercises you can do to take care of these is an exercise that I learned from a person who teaches writing, Elizabeth Neeld, N-E-E-L-D. She's taught college writing, and she's published the books that are most used in college writing. So you'd think that she's an artist of forms, and it's another form of art. You'd think she would be fine with being able to write no matter what she wanted, but she doesn't. So one of the things she does is a technique called looping. And all you need to do is to have a piece of paper, a pencil, and a timer for this. The first stage is you sit down and you write society owes me a living, and it's not giving it to me. Why not? And you rant. And rant for 3 minutes on paper. You can't do this aloud if no one's listening, but be careful. So then on 3 minute point, the timer goes off, you take a look at it, and usually you'll find there's some kind of idea forming in the middle of there. Oh, well, that's because when I was growing up, I was always told that I should just go to college and get my MRS, or I was always told that if I worked hard, the company would take care of me. And for a lot of us, and a lot of the people certainly in artist career training, those are not unusual thoughts to have because they were the way that work was happening back then. The next thing you'll see, then write for 3 more minutes. You'll find something else. Oh, okay, you'll find perhaps that there's something you've been neglecting to do in your business because you don't know how to do it. Fine, you start with that idea. Write for 3 more minutes. You can see what will happen is you'll get all the excuses out of your way. If you keep doing this, I recommend 3 times 3 minutes and then take a break because you can be too hard on yourself too. And you want to look for insights. You don't want to pound yourself into the ground. But this myth can really hang around, and the only way it's going to change is to say, I owe it to myself to create my own living. So that's the internal one. Do the history and make that decision. The external one is very simple. You go and you look for money. I have on our website under the affiliate resources, we have, and featured experts, we have Benny Shaboy. And Patricia may know of him in Northern California. He's in Benicia, California. He publishes something called Art Opportunities. Let me get my mouth around that one. Art Opportunities Monthly. And there are over $3.7 million worth of grants just in that publication, and it's not the only one. There are not as many grants, admittedly, for individuals as there are for organizations, but they're out there. So you can find yourself some way to make a living. So the internal step is look at your history and then make sure you decide that how you're going to make your living. And then the second thing is to look for money, grants, and so on. Are all over the place. Myth number 3 is that artists are not business people. Now, this statement articulates one of the most common misconceptions, and that is that artists can't learn to handle their own career, and that's why there are galleries. Well, once a gallery is representing your career, it's not over. You still have to handle your own career. So the fact that business artists are not business people, it's simply not valid. In fact, there was a museum exhibit in L.A. about 3 years ago on the business of art, and I believe you can still find that on the website, that shows that going way back, artists have been very savvy about business. But it just hasn't been as public, and people weren't as aware of it. And there is no reason why you can't become a business person if you are not now. There's also no reason why you can't have the business run the way you want it. A lot of people who switch from business careers into an art career drag along their bad business habits with them. When they drag those bad business habits along with them, they're going to repeat all the problems they had before, but they're going to compound them because the art world does not work the way most offices do. So what I recommend that you do is, again, sit down with yourself and say, when I am really producing well and when the work is flowing and when I feel eager to contact people and take care of the business details, what's going on around me? What does my studio look like? What state is my office in? For some of you, none of that, the external will matter. For others, for me, it will drive me crazy. But as those of you who know me know, I organize everything very down to details because I don't want to spend time doing that. I want to spend time making art and talking to people about making a living making art. So the first thing is check around and see what would it be like if you could have it the way you want it. Then how would you run your business if you could do it that way? There is an assessment tool that I use where I help people look at the instincts that they use to make their decisions. And it's really interesting to find that some of the instincts that would actually help them in their business are ones they've been told by other people that are harmful. So in this case, listen to yourself about how you want to run your business from the internal side. Now, a business only runs because of its clients. So you're in charge of your art and how you make that, but your clients are in charge ultimately of how your business will run. Because if you want them to come back and buy your art and take your workshops and buy your books or whatever else you create, then you need to have it be a place where they feel welcome, where they want to come, and where it's easy for them. Now, a lot of the people who will try and bargain with you, this is one of the reasons that people get uncomfortable, again, about money, in a situation where someone will come in, obviously well-heeled, and they will look at your work, and they will ask you for a discount. And that's a signal to you right away that they perhaps don't see you as a business person, or they may expect you to be one. You have to live up to one of those. I would live up to the second one. And I would talk to them about that. Now, that's another whole 45-minute class, but we may be able to get into some of these at the end. So the internal focus on that one is simply just to sit down and be realistic. We have a checklist in our Act 101 program of 60 items that ask people, are you ready for business? So sit down and, first of all, see if you're really ready for business. Identify what you know, what you don't know. So that's the internal step. The external step is get out and take a marketing class at a college or study successful artists in magazines. I mean, there are ranges. I can give you ways to do this from no cost to high cost. But you can start by simply reading magazines about what other people do. I write articles. I write newsletter. I know everybody on the TeleSummit panel does that. Study all of those. They will help you. Myth number four is that my art speaks for itself. Now, this one is mostly held by artists, but it does sometimes appear out in the public. But this is one where most of the work has to be internal. Art certainly has the power to transcend words and language, no question about that. But the age in which we're living now leaves everything up to interpretation. And everyone needs to be able to communicate clearly, and especially because there has been an explosion of tools to communicate, I find that people are not communicating as well. They're assuming that the tools have done the job in a lot of cases. So I encourage you not to let your art speak for itself, but to speak for your art. There's often no one else that's going to speak about it in a way that a non-arts audience can get it. If you do want to make a living and you do want gallery representation or you want commissions or any of that, you're going to have to speak about your art. So, again, this is something that often really the best way to do it is to sit down on your own with a nice big cup of tea or coffee and a pen and paper. There's an absolute difference in the way that the information you write will come out than if you use a computer. And if you want to do both, that's great too. But start with a pen in your hand and sit and just free write. Free writing means you don't have to worry about punctuation. You don't have to worry about what it sounds like, looks like. You're just getting the ideas out of your head and onto paper. And what I recommend that you do if you're not used to this, and if you don't have it already, it's a really good idea, is to have a notebook. Now, in one of the other preview classes, I mentioned that I like to have the artists that I work with have a notebook, a spiral-bound notebook, and they use it from both ends, from both covers. On one cover, you write art, and you flip it over. On the other cover, you write business. And it's a journal to keep track of those random thoughts that you have while you're creating work. So while you're in your studio, keep it open to the art side and just write those thoughts that come to you as you're making the work. Because you think you'll remember them, but so many things that we have to keep in our brains. Best idea is to write them down. It's amazing to me sometimes I'll have a great idea, I'll write it down, I'll go flipping back, and about 3 months ago I had the same idea. So that's the one side. Then flip it over to the other side, and whenever you're somewhere in a gallery and you are for listening to someone talking about other people's work, or you're at your own show and there are people there, write down what they're saying. Now, you need to be tactful about this. You can't go around writing things down underneath people. But you do need to find a way to keep track of this, because then when you have a show or when you want to write something or want to describe your work, you already have a start. You have a beginning for the kinds of words that you can use. And particularly if you're paying attention to the art of the people who are at your art shows and talking about your art, then when you create your marketing materials and you use those words, it's like magic. They go, ah, there, that's what I've been looking for. They probably don't remember they said that at your own art show. So, again, you create a little database here for yourself from your experience. So these telesummits, this is really great. You're getting all this information and writing lots of notes, but it's not going to pay off for you unless you use it. So same with these ideas. If you're going to use any of these ideas, get started right away. Get started right after the call. Now, the other thing that you can do to practice, so that's the internal side, is to get those books and collect it. The external side is that you then need to do something about it, and there is nothing like forcing yourself by setting a deadline. Go out and find an arts organization to make a talk to if you're not familiar with this. Your local library will probably love to have slide presentations. We have them in ours all the time. We have a little town of 22,000 people here, but I've seen tremendous art slideshows from all over the world. Make a commitment to go to an art school. I taught a class. There are so many art schools that are underfunded now, and I have a very strong commitment to youth and art. So one of my volunteer activities is to go teach summer art classes to people. Do that if you haven't done that yet. It's a great way, because kids are very forgiving, so you can learn with children. So there are, again, two steps. Myth number five. This one is really, again, I doubt that most of you on this call are familiar with this one, but you probably know some people who have it, or you might remember it. If I didn't work out once, it will never work out. And the art world works very slowly, a lot more slowly than a lot of other business environments that I've worked in over the years. And it takes an enormous amount of persistence and determination to succeed. It often takes years and years of just getting your name out there before people will pay attention to you. And you might be lucky and get out there and blast onto the scene, but be careful. You still need to maintain it, because I've also seen a few artists come like that, and you don't want to be a flash in the pan, because you want to continue your work consistently. So if it didn't work out once, it just means that it wasn't a right fit. And that takes the pressure off and takes you off of your own case by putting it into perspective. It's like taking it out of your head and out of your heart when it really hurts, putting it in front of you and having a good look at it. So, okay, that did not work. In fact, if you can get to it with a little humor sometimes afterwards and really laugh and go, man, that did not work, and write down all the reasons why. Again, there's some real power to writing it down and getting it out of your body, because when you are absorbing it, you're incorporating it. So write down all the reasons why it didn't work, but also write down all the things that you did that worked, even if they didn't create the outcome you wanted. Because what you're doing then is getting smart, and I'm building on the comment I just made about using your experience to tell you what the next step is, and learning from your experience. There, mistakes are better than failures, because if you take mistake apart and put miss-take, it's like in the movies, you get to do another take. A failure is when you don't learn from your mistakes. So each time something little happens, take it on. It's a lot easier than letting it build up to a big failure. You also, what really helps here is to have bifocal vision. I really talk a lot about this. You need short-term focus on what am I going to do right in the next couple of days, months, years, whatever your short-term is. My short-term focus is I have absolutely crystal clear idea what I'm doing every single week of the current month, while minute, and I have a pretty clear idea of the next 2 months, and I've got written down idea of the rest. I try and stay really focused on what's going on ahead of me. But if I have short-term goals, I know I don't meet deadlines. You heard me set a timer. I have calendars all over this office. I do everything I can to make it easy for me to stay on track and to do what's important and to be able to see if it's working or not. So that's one thing. I eliminate a lot of problems by just staying, creating a plan, staying on that schedule, and seeing what happens. It doesn't mean it always works out like I wanted it to, but it means that I know what I have to do next. And then your long-term planner, really, I've written about this in our Art Matters magazine. Long-term plans help you deal with short-range failures because you go, oh, well, it wasn't that one next, but I can go over here now. So another thing that you can do is try and spread your eggs into many baskets and not have them all in one. For some of you, that means having your work in different sizes. For some of you, in different markets. And for some of you, it might even having two different kinds of media. For example, I know a lot of sculptors who paint in between the stages of their brass work being done and so on. So if it didn't work out once, find out why. The first step is always to find out why. And then the other side of that coin is you can't do all that research on your own. So the internal part, you can look at what you did. The external part is you got to get out there and find out from people. And if you've ever had a customer who was an experience that you would like to forget, remember those people. You'll probably learn more from the customers that are dissatisfied with something you do than from anybody else. But don't turn away from them either. Always thank them. It might be painful at the time, but always thank them. You will learn something from the experience. So have a lot of options. I am really a contingency person. I always like to have two or three ways I can do anything. So I'll try the first one. If that doesn't work, I'll move to the backup. But you can't be a quitter. It takes a while. There are a lot of people that in the Artist Career Training Program, for example, and some of you on this call who I know have thought about your careers for years, and now you're taking that step. So do with your art career what you're doing here. Learn what you need to learn by reading, by listening, by watching, and then go out and apply it and observe. Again, it's all that kind of a cycling through process. So the myths, again, are that all artists are poor. That's wrong. All artists have the opportunity of making a living and being self-sustaining. Myth number two, society owes artists a living. Society doesn't owe anybody anything and doesn't appear to be paying off too much, so it's better for you to do it for yourself. Artists are not business people. Now that one's blown out already just by the fact that you're on the call and you're doing something about your career. That's a professional approach. My art speaks for itself. You know that there are all kinds of ways out there that our art is spoken for. It's why the critics came along. It's why we have art magazines, and it's why we have portfolios. Myth five, if it didn't work out once, it'll never work out. Being a professional is a long-term approach. It's not ready, fire, aim. If you are committed to succeed over the long term and you make plans and you are observant and you make adjustments, you can't. So now we're going to take it off mute.
Okay, Olive, I'm here.
Oh, aren't you wonderful?
So, artists, here's the request again. For everybody, please make sure that you hit star 6. But, of course, if you already hit star 6 to mute yourself, then you're not going to want to do it again to unmute yourself. So try to remember which way you're going, which direction. Make sure you're muted, and I'm going to give everybody a couple of seconds to do this, except for those of you who have a question. All right, here we go. We're going to try this. Hello, artists. Does someone have a question for Olive? Hello? Can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, good. Are there any questions out there? Sounded like somebody was attempting. Could you possibly be? If you're trying to say something and I'm not hearing you, you're on, your star six is muting. You need to star six to unmute.
Hello?
Hello.
I have a question. Alita, maybe you can comment a little bit, because I was just in thinking of one of the things that seems to stop me when I want to move forward is when I come across all of the talent that's out there, it just seems overwhelming. I mean, the competition just seems huge. And, yeah, I don't know if you have any comments or tips on how we can sort of get past this, because I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels this.
Okay, so okay. The question is, there's all that talent out there. It's overwhelming. Competition is huge. How do we handle that? Is that
yeah.
your question?
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you a quick question. Do you sense any myths hiding underneath that?
Oh, definitely.
Now, what ones are they?
Well, do they have to be from your five, or...?
No, that's only 5 of 12 we have in the program, and there's more than that. So I'd just like to start with that. No. And it doesn't have to be one you subscribe to. I'm not putting you on the spot here. Just what might be underneath that? There's too much competition. It's overwhelming. What's the myth?
Well, I guess it's just a general, like, well, one for me is, like, who do I think I am that I can succeed in this very competitive, you know, it's that myth of you can't really make a living as an artist, I guess.
Okay. So who do you think you are? I think that's more the point, because that one is underneath you can't make a living. I remember this one. This is one of my family's favorites. Who do you think you are? Well, that's where you need to actually stop and say, how am I different from
hey.
Hang on,
hey.
I'm gonna hang on. All
please,
of work.
I got everything ready downstairs, so you can go downstairs.
Somebody's on the
did
line that has
it?
Not muted themselves. Can you mute yourself, please? Okay, I'm going to mute everybody so all of them can
okay.
do this.
Okay.
Okay, go well.
All right, then you can unmute me again. Okay. All right, so when this is overwhelmed. I hear this every single day from artists. And, yeah, the competition is huge. You are one of 4.5 million artists in the performing arts, fine arts, visual arts in the United States. That's no small number. But there's a lot more competition in a lot of other fields. So right away, I think that's the background of everybody's working life. That may sound a bit harsh, but it's how it is. And the other side of the coin of that competition being huge is that you live in a country where there are lots of consumers. So the multiple is great. There are a lot more people. I don't know what the last census count was, but it's many more. It's at least 100 people per artist, if not more, when you narrow down people who want to buy art. The myth that you identified is just perfect to answer your question. Who do you think you are? That's the question you need to answer, because art is purchased for a number of reasons. It's not just the art. They want to buy a bit of you, the story of the artist, the other things that you've done that are exciting and interesting. So the best way that you can debunk this myth is study people who you think are your competition and learn from them. What are they doing that you're not doing well, or that they're doing better than you? What are they doing and that you haven't even thought of? What can you do that they haven't even thought of? There's 3 ways to go at it right there. Does that help?
Hold on, I'll unmute you, dear.
Yes, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Great.
Hi, this is Suzanne. I have a question.
Yes, Suzanne.
It's kind of a practical question.
That's good. We like practical.
I recently moved from L.A., where I had some pretty good success selling my art. I now live in Colorado. And I have really put myself out there in my local community. I've been in 6 shows in this past year, but I'm finding my stuff isn't selling. And what I'm starting to think is that I have to significantly cut my prices and maybe even modify my subject matter in order to fit in this market. And so I'm just wondering what your comment is about that. I mean, how does one go backwards when one has had success? I've tried to build on what I did in L.A. successfully, you know, but obviously I live here now, and the market's different, and what people will pay is different.
Okay. So, you moved from L.A. how long ago?
About a year and a half.
Okay, so it's not that long, 18 months. All right, and if you had an art network in L.A. that included all the people you knew in your galleries, et cetera, your whole art world, how many people would that be?
Well, actually, I sold individually. I wasn't in a gallery.
Okay.
But, you know, I had a database of probably 2,000 people who knew what I was doing.
Excellent. Okay.
But, you know, I mean, in terms of patrons, you know, I probably sold to 15, 20 people, but I sold continuously.
Excellent. Okay. So you have a model that you know that worked in that market. Now, here you're doing shows. That you didn't do shows in L.A.?
No, I did my own shows in L.A. I did benefits. I put my own events together.
Okay.
And it's a little tougher here because I'm in a very rural area.
Yeah.
It's more of a closed community.
Yep. We have a couple of artists in our program. One has just moved to Northern Washington, similar idea. Now, one of the things I want to look at here is you said how to go backwards. Is there a myth hiding underneath that before I get to the practical stuff?
Well, you know, maybe there's a little self-worth issue.
Okay. Pat, thank you for playing that. That's acceptable. Yeah. Because I don't think it's back. Nothing is backwards. Everything in your life you're building on all the time, whether you like it or not. So here's what I think. This strategy has worked very well for several of our artists who have done moves like this. The first thing is don't lose track of your 2,000 people in
right.
L.A. Stay in constant touch with them, especially since you told me that you sold individually to them. There's no reason why you can't do that from Colorado.
Right.
And you can get back to L.A. It's not that far.
Right.
So I would look at this by saying, look, I have one mature market, and now I'm creating a new one. So I would look at it that way and see how that, first of all, change your mind shift, because that should bring your self-worth up. I don't know, but I'd be pretty proud if I had 2,000 people and then continuously sold to 15 or 20 people.
Uh-huh.
That's major. That is what most artists want. So you're creating envy on the part of all those people you can't hear right now.
So, yes, but I still have this practical issue.
You still have this practical issue. So now what I suggest is you stopped doing shows and benefits, so it is a rural area, but what kind of involvement have you had in the rural area where you could get some personal connection so far?
I'm an artist in residence at a local art center, and I've participated in a number of shows there, but, you know, to be honest, because I've been moving and in transition and managing an estate, I haven't had a whole lot of a time to go out and do volunteer work or whatever.
Yeah. Okay, so your transition time, this should be, most of the people that I work with, it takes about 18 months to 24 months to resettle somewhere. Because I know that I moved here, and it took me 18 months to start getting enough of a local connection that I had it, that it was viable.
Uh-huh.
So you're just at the launching point now. And you have to get rid of all that other stuff before you can do this. Now,
I'm getting a lot of
hang on. I'm going to mute us.
In the carport.
Okay.
If people
could
open the
please
door
hit star six.
And the
okay.
Top.
Yeah, did it open?
Oh, my gosh. I'll attempt before you go on in just a second. I just would like the artist to know that I don't know who is not muted, but whoever's not muted keeps having a conversation with somebody in their environment, and we can all hear it. And it's really hard for Alita and this artist to answer these questions. So please check out if that's you. Okay, go ahead, Alita.
Okay, and whoever you are, if I don't answer you fully by the end of the day, by all means, send me an email, anybody who has questions, because we want to make sure we can get them answered, and our technology should not be your problem.
That's right. And actually, we need to move on, so we're going to let the rest of the questions, you can send them to me, and I will make sure Alita gets them, or you can send them directly to Alita.
So shall I complete that one, or are we done now?
Go ahead.
Okay, here's what I'd recommend. You need to, since you have the capacity from what I've picked up already, now it's time for you to take some kind of a leadership role in a community. And take a leadership role respectfully, because you're entering as, I did a lot of work with people who lived in other countries, you're entering as a newcomer, but you can make fast connections and find out who the movers are, because that's obviously part of how you're able to create this other market that you already have. But if you'd like, I can continue. I know Ariane has another person coming on. Send me an email and a website and so on. I'd be happy to continue answering this question with you.
And I would just like to add a quick note here that L.A. is a universe unto itself almost.
Yeah.
Think of Colorado as the whole state is yours, mm-hmm. and don't just be tied to your rural area, because you've got some extraordinary pockets of galleries, and just find out where those pockets are and just broaden your connection base.
Very good, yeah.
Okay, great. Alita, thank you so much. I love that you took us deep today inside. This whole day seems to be about going deep inside, and we're on that theme today. So I'm so glad you started that. Thank you very much, Alita. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tomorrow. You need to send
me
a number, okay?
Excuse me?
Is it the same number?
It is, my dear.
Oh, then I'm ready. I'll be
You're ready.
Tomorrow. And if you send me emails tonight, I'll try and answer them.
Thank you so much, Alita. All right, I'll pass them on to you if I get them.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Have a good day.
You too.